It's very unusual for a person to be tried four times for murder, but that's exactly what happened to Cal Harris, a wealthy Tioga County, New York resident who was found not guilty on Tuesday in a non-jury trial in Schoharie County, bringing an end to the criminal portion of a 15-year-long legal saga. Harris was charged with killing his wife on the night of September 11, 2001. Her body has never been found. Robert Gavin, who covered the case for the Times Union, says the trial of Cal Harris was long and legally complex.
Off the top of my head, the only person I'm aware of who was tried four times was John Gotti Jr. in a federal case in the Southern District, which is in Manhattan. And in that case, there was a continuation of mistrials. In this case, the first time Cal Harris went to trial in 2007, he was convicted. And you had this very unusual situation where at the very end of that case, at the day of sentencing, I believe it was the day of sentencing, a man by the name of Kevin Tubbs emerged and said that on the day Michelle Harris disappeared, this is the night of September 11th, hours the next morning, so it would actually be September 12th, he says that he saw a man arguing with a woman in the end of the driveway of the Cal Harris and Michelle Harris home, arguing together. Person who he said did not fit the resemblance of Cal Harris was arguing with Michelle Harris at the end of their driveway, and that gave him cause to think that maybe the authorities should know about it, that maybe Cal had been convicted wrongfully in that case. Now, the judge, upon hearing this, agreed to set aside the verdict and then the first trial. And that's what gave Cal Harris a second trial because, the judge in that case, this is still in Tioga County, mind you, sets it aside. There's a second trial in which that witness, Kevin Tubbs, testifies. In that case, which an Albany attorney, Terry Kinlan, was one of the attorneys defending Cal Harris in that case. In that case, Tubbs testifies and Cal Harris testifies. He goes to trial, and once again, he is convicted of murdering his wife, Michelle, in that case as well. In that case, it goes to, he spends a couple of years in state prison as this case is being appealed. The mid-level court, I know this gets a little confusing with a lot of legal stuff here, but you have, the appellate division is what upheld or denies appeals from the lower court level. That court upheld the conviction, but you had one judge on the panel, an Albany judge, Bud Malone, who dissented. The case went to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals actually agreed with the defense that there was a juror issue in that case. They believe that there was a misuse of a challenge. I'm sorry, that a juror was wrongfully dismissed for cause. I'm making this more difficult than it has to be. That a juror was basically not dismissed and that they had used up their peremptory challenges. It's really a technicality. I mean, it's a total technicality. But that was the prime reason that second trial, that was also overturned. Now, when the Court of Appeals wrote its decision, in its decision, it basically all but just suggested that the huge amount of publicity in the case in the Southern Tier was an issue. That's one of the reasons why I believe the third trial, there was an agreement to move it to a change of venue, which moved the case from Tioga County to rural Schoharie County here in the outstretches of the Capital Region. That case went before Judge Bartlett, who is a Schoharie County judge, and the jury in that case deliberated about 11 days, some 55, 56 hours, did not reach a verdict. There's a mistrial. So this first, again, to recap, the first two trials, he's convicted. The cases get overturned. Those are both in the Southern Tier, Tioga County. That last trial is a mistrial. That brings us to the fourth trial, which is also in Schoharie County. And it's kind of funny because the whole purpose of a change of venue is because you want a jury that's not affected by publicity. Cal Harris elected to go non-jury. So in the end, it really wasn't an issue. They get Richard Mott, who's a there's some irony here. Richard Mott was elected in 2012 and one of the judges he replaced was Judge Malone. He came in at, he was assigned this non-jury case. He got this trial, I want to say it started about 7.5, 8 weeks ago. He heard testimony, and he deliberated since Wednesday. And it was very unusual because typically in a non-jury trial, a judge will begin his or her deliberations and say, hey, I will be back at X time next week, and I will deliver the verdict. Or at the very least, I will let the attorneys know what time I will deliver the verdict. In this case, Justice Smott actually had the attorneys waiting around just like a jury does. So that was really unusual. So he started deliberating late Wednesday. He deliberated Thursday. He deliberated Friday. Did not deliberate Monday. They did not have court on Mondays during this trial. And called the attorneys in for 12:45 yesterday. And then the verdict came at about 2:15.
It was no secret that the marriage was in trouble, but a body was never found. What was the main thrust of the prosecution's argument?
Yeah, a lot of people have mentioned that there was no body found. You got to keep in mind that's not always a surefire path to an acquittal. The Scott Peterson case, there was no body. There are other cases where there's no body. There was also no murder weapon found in this case. This was a highly circumstantial case. The reality is that circumstantial cases are usually very successful. Of course, that's assuming the case is before a jury. In this case, the case was based on a few things. A big part of the district attorney's case was blood found in the family's garage that did match Michelle Harris. They did have evidence that it had been diluted. They had a number of statements attributed to Cal Harris in which he allegedly told Michelle that she would disappear, that he could make her disappear, that he had told her he would kill her. Among the other evidence they had was allegations that he showed a consciousness of guilt, that he, as just one example I'll give you, they had testimony that a week after Michelle Harris disappeared, he was at a relative's home in Cooperstown, and they said at one point, hey, I think they found Michelle. And Cal Harris allegedly said, no, they didn't. And there was a number of things like that. They apparently, according to testimony, had never actually tried to call Michelle the morning she disappeared. The motive alleged by the prosecution was that they were heading for divorce and that he was going to owe Michelle about $740,000 in settlement. He's a very wealthy, comes from a very wealthy family. They own a bunch of dealerships in the Southern Tier area. And I guess what was alleged is that she, depending on which side you believed, the defense said that there was already an agreement that she was going to accept his offer to take, the $740,000, and that was it, that the divorce was actually becoming less acrimonious as it came toward a hearing and the date. The prosecution said that she was not going to accept it and that she was going to have his property appraised, and that which could have cost him, potentially in the millions, in addition to losing custody of their four kids. Kirk Martin, the DA of Tioga County, alleged in his closing argument that Cal Harris actually took advantage of the 9/11 attacks, because this happened on the day of 9/11, a night, and that he basically took advantage of, at a time when everyone else was mourning this, horrific day in history, that he decided to pick that day to off his wife. It was a very highly circumstantial case, it just, obviously, we didn't hear the reasons why Judge Mott went for an acquittal, but obviously it didn't reach the level of beyond a reasonable doubt to him, which is, made clear by his verdict yesterday.
Robert Gavin covered the Cal Harris trial for the Times Union.